This episode is sponsored in part by StrongDM. Transitioning your team to work from home, like basically everyone on the planet is? Managing gazillions of SSH keys, database passwords, and Kubernetes certificates? Consider StrongDM. Manage and audit access to servers, databases like Route 53, and Kubernetes clusters, no matter where your employees happen to be. You can use StrongDM to extend your identity provider and also Cognito to manage infrastructure access. Automate onboarding, offboarding, waterboarding, and moving people within roles. Grant temporary access that automatically expires to whatever team is unlucky enough to be on call this week. Admins get full auditability into whatever anyone does. What they connect to, what queries they run, what commands they type. Full visibility into everything. That includes video replays. For databases, like Route 53, it's a single unified query log across all of your database management systems. It's used by companies like Hearst, Peloton, Betterment, Greenhouse, and SoFi to manage their access. It's more control and less hassle. StrongDM. Manage and audit remote access to infrastructure. To get a free 14-day trial, visit strongdm.com/SITC. Tell them I sent you and thank them for tolerating my calling Route 53 a database. Back at the start of these unprecedented times, my business partner and I hosted a pair of Q&A sessions fielding all sorts of questions from the audience about the world of AWS, specifically billing. Today, I want to go through a bunch of the questions that were asked under the billing category with a bit more nuance in the responses than I was able to give back when they were asked live. We begin. Why is my bill so big? Is probably the first and most common question that everyone likes to ask when we get into this world of AWS billing. In the world of cloud, you're not billed for what you use, you're billed for what you forget to shut off. Once we start working with customers in our consulting practice, they tend to assume we're going to show up on day one, reach into our bag of tricks, and using some form of dark magic, make the bill shrink that way. In reality, step one is let's take a look at the bill. Many people love talking about the AWS bill in the way that it appears, namely alphabetically. But if someone else asks me about Alexa for Business one more time, I'm going to snap. Look at the big numbers first and then work your way down. There aren't any secrets here. The bill is the only single source of truth for what's living in your entire account, full stop. Unfortunately, AWS does not, at the time of this recording, have an inventory service other than the bill. Two, what tips do you have for lowering the cost of AWS that apply very broadly? Let's jump right in. First, figure out where the money's going. You don't want to spend time optimizing something that isn't a meaningful portion of your spend. Do things the easy way before you go for the hard things. Next, focus on the easy opportunities for winning. The patterns that tend to be consistent across customers are pretty pervasive. EC2 is always the big spend item. Then it's followed by data transfer, Elastic Block Store, RDS, and S3 in no particular order. Start with those five services and you're likely to find yourself in a good spot unless you're doing something sort of weird. After that, take a look and see if you're running any managed NAT gateways. It's a handy service, but it has a way of being phenomenally expensive because it adds a 4.5 cent per gigabyte data processing charge on top of any other data transfer charges you're paying. If you're storing data in S3 through that gateway, use a private endpoint, which is free, unless you want to pay the same amount of money as it would cost to store that data for almost 2 months. Don't buy everything at once if that makes you uncomfortable. If you're hemming and hawing about making a reserved instance or savings plan purchase because you're unsure what the future may hold, buy some portion of it instead. Cut your proposed purchase by 20% and then another 20% again and so on until you feel comfortable with what you're spending. You can always make another buy afterwards. You're going to spend the money one way or the other. Get rid of data you don't need. The biggest pattern I see about big data projects is that they claim to be able to find anything in the world you could possibly want except a business model. Do you really need all of those transaction logs from 2012? If you're storing 4 petabytes of them, I'd posit maybe you don't. Worst case, you can always pass old data into Glacier Deep Archive, which is cheap as dirt, and the only caveat is that you need to give it a day's notice before you can retrieve it. Not the end of the world. So there you have it. If you have a problem that I can solve in a tweet, that's what I'll do for things like that. Sending you a contract via Twitter would be weird anyway. Truth be told, people did me a lot of favors when I was starting out, and you can never really repay that. You can only pay it forward. If you're a small shop worried about your AWS bill, please reach out. I'll be waiting. What's the biggest surprise you've had on your AWS bill? Always fun to have these discussions. The biggest surprise Mike once experienced way back when we were first getting started working together in an AWS environment was that the CloudWatch bill was larger than the Datadog bill that was hitting the CloudWatch API. Turns out that nonsense gets really expensive. My takeaway was, holy crap, they charge for that? Today I'm less surprised. Of course they charge for that. They charge for everything. Take a look at what you're actually monitoring. EBS volumes are a great example of this. You can get hypervisor metrics from CloudWatch, but not internal metrics. In almost every case, you don't care about those hypervisor level metrics for any of your EBS stuff. What happens is, if you take a look at the various metrics you're pulling, it doesn't really answer the real question you always have. Is my disk about to fill up? Pro tip, use GP2, not IO1 or now IO2 disk volumes, for almost everything. You'll save a boatload of money because provisioned IOPS are really expensive. To get the information you actually care about, there needs to be an agent inside the guest operating system. If you're running something like Datadog, just query that about the data you care about in your volumes and turn off the things that are charging you per request for data you don't actually need. And if for some strange reason you need to look at this in the future, you can access it directly within CloudWatch. You just won't be getting charged for requests until then. In what you might be forgiven for mistaking for a blast from the past, today I want to talk about New Relic. They seem to be a relatively legacy monitoring company, and I would have agreed with that assessment up until relatively recently. But they did something a little out there. They reworked everything. They went open source, they made it so you can monitor your whole stack in one place, and most notably from my perspective, they simplified their pricing into something that is much more affordable for almost everyone. There's even a free tier with one user and 100 gigs per month, totally free. Check it out at newrelic.com. This one came from more from Idle Curiosity. How do large enterprises pay their bill? The way you or I end up paying our AWS bill, in any case, is here's a credit card. And then when that card is invariably maxed out, we move on to here's another credit card. If you use the Amazon Prime card, despite what it says to the contrary in its terms, you can get 5% back on your AWS bill. You're welcome. Thanks for listening. Once you get into enterprise territory, which is somewhere around $1 million a year range for cloud spend, both Amazon and the companies that are paying Amazon switch over to invoice payments, which are paid via check, wire, or ACH. A customer might be able to negotiate 2% off of their bill, while Amazon avoids getting hit with the higher credit card processing fees. It's the same reason you don't usually get to buy a car with a credit card. The dealer doesn't want to pay the overhead interchange fee. What are your suggestions for dealing with costs that don't get attributed to resources or specific tags in the cost and usage report? An example was given was data transfer bytes out from Lambda. You're never going to be able to get full visibility into the spend of everything going on in your account. At some point, you end up giving up. We've gotten to 80 or 90% coverage of tags, and the rest sort of goes to slush. You want to be directionally correct in most cases, but for almost every environment, you don't want to drive yourself mad by spending thousands of dollars to trace down pennies. So the answer to this often is it probably doesn't matter for most architectures. For most of them, the Lambda cost and auxiliary costs incurred by Lambda are minuscule. Anytime we see thousands of dollars in Lambda charges, we see millions of dollars in EC2. Make sure it's a problem that's worth solving. Unless there's a strategic reason to go down that rabbit hole, it probably isn't worth it. Time that your team spends playing slap and tickle with your AWS bill is time they're not spending working on their next feature. What's the first thing I would do to reduce EC2 networking costs? I'd figure out what the costs look like first. Is it expensive because it's transferring between different availability zones? Is it going out to the internet? Is it something else? What region is the data transfer expensive in? What workloads do I have hanging out there? What's likely to be causing these costs? You can get fairly granular after a few iterative cycles in Cost Explorer, but the other side of it is going down the rabbit hole of looking at what's happening inside the various subnets in question. I found it's easier often to solve this problem by talking directly to people and finding out what's going on in the environment. Maybe I get a response like this. Oh, that's the thing where we just replicate data around in a circle because we don't understand what a storage area network is. Figuring out what it is that's driving the cost usually starts the conversation. You can go deeper with VPC flow logs, of course, but they're generally a bear to wind up doing meaningful analysis on. And the last question that we wound up getting was, any advice on how to break down costs into per-user metrics? There seems to be a huge disconnect between bulk resource costs and a user doing a few API calls. It's a spectrum. You start off with the most naive approach that everyone uses. You take the AWS bill for the last month, you look at the user metric you're trying to get to, such as monthly active users or daily active users, and then you do some simple division. That starts to break down because no matter how many users you have or don't have, you're going to spend the same amount of money for the Jira server, for example. And this is where conversations with finance begin to become valuable and why having a sound tagging strategy is so important. When you're trying to answer this question, you're likely going to break things down to a model where you have a single user and you have to spend X dollars to get everything up and running for the infrastructure tooling needed to serve that user. On top of that, there's then going to be a marginal cost for every additional user beyond that. For most workloads, that's probably going to be more aligned to the cost per 1,000 users, because unless you have a few very large customers, you're not going to see a number that's meaningful to humans. Every user we have costs 3/10,000ths of a cent. Great, that number doesn't make any sense to anyone. Focus instead on getting a number that's meaningful for planning and discussion purposes. The challenge is that people tend to optimize for what they measure. In some cases, driving costs down on metrics like this is the wrong answer. You're going to want to optimize for other things like user happiness or still having an environment after a disaster. Otherwise, you can drop the cost per user to zero by turning everything off. That's generally untenable, despite the fact that many companies probably should do exactly that, like Facebook. If you have any other questions about AWS billing you'd like me to answer, please feel free to reach out. I'm Corey Quinn. Thanks for listening.
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.